And thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, where we're changing the way we experience life and spirituality. Today is July 22nd, 2016. Today on A Course in Miracles, I'm excited to welcome back author Susan Dugan. And our topic today is pretty timely. Miracles or murder? What does it mean to go above the battleground? Now, this is inspired, of course, by the ACIM text, chapter 23, section 4, which is called Above the Battleground. Now, I know if you haven't been studying the course for a while, you might be going, battleground, what are you talking about? But once you start reading this and once you start thinking about it, you'll recognize exactly what that battleground is. So please, if you do have the text, you might want to open it up to chapter 23 and just read along with us. And I know that many of you are very familiar with my guest, Susan Dugan, because she's the author of 3 books on forgiveness. And she also is the co-founder of the School for A Course in Miracles, and she facilitates ACIM study groups here in Denver, Colorado. And I'm so appreciative of the fact that that she's just a teacher out there in her gentleness and her clarity, but also that she agrees to come on to, you know, to the show at least once a month and talk about some of these things. And always, you know, she brings up really, really timely and interesting topics from the course, whether it's from the textbook or the manual for teachers or from the workbook. So I really appreciate that she's here, and I appreciate that you're here too. And one of the things that you can do while we're talking this morning is that you can actually join us on Facebook, because we have a private group over there. So if you're interested in doing that, and by the way, you don't need to, but if you want to, you can just go to our website, which is 12radio.com, and on the left side, click the chat button. And when you do, that will link you right over to Facebook, where you can ask to join our group. And there again, you can ask questions or make comments, that sort of thing, or just, you know, say hello to the other people that are listening and participating that way. So let's get started. You got those textbooks open. Let's get Susan here, and let's start talking about what it means to be above the battleground. Good morning, Susan. Welcome.
Hi, CA. It's always nice to be here. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And of course, once again, such a timely topic.
Always timely.
Always timely. So perfect. Yeah. Everything from the course is, but this one is, because I think many of us, at least I feel very beaten up right now, and beaten up by myself, but just beaten up. And it's like, I need to be above the battleground. I need to understand what that means and to just kind of have that kind of respite, you know? Sure. So I'm anxious to hear what you have to say about this section of the text.
Well, you know, yes, it certainly seems in our dream that things are, you know, we're seeing a lot of collective examples of the world seeming like a battleground right now. And, you know, we've got, I mean, which it really always has been, but you know, it certainly seems like we hear about a lot more things all the time that are, you know, that seem to be these attacks, these senseless attacks. You know, we've had shootings in Orlando. We had the Nice, you know, incident. I don't know what to call it, in which, you know, a large number of people were killed on Bastille Day while watching fireworks. But so, you know, we've had a lot. We've had the contentious political race here in the States. People all over the world are experiencing, you know, in the Middle East and in other places every day, you know, some terrible carnage, it seems. And so we have, you know, we're kind of witnessing all of this going on around us. From the course's perspective, though, you know, it's a very, very radical course in which it's really asking us to, despite how real everything in our dream seems, and it does seem very real, there's no question about that. The body was, our bodies were, you know, we programmed in a way by the mind our bodies to witness to the reality of the dream, to project everything outward and, you know, the idea of guilt outward, and to experience it, everything, as an incoming attack in which we have to constantly defend ourselves from the outside. And certainly these kinds of things that we're seeing attest to that belief and reinforce that belief. And we're not aware, you know, we forgot that we made all of this up. So we're not aware that, this all serves a purpose of keeping us mindless. And that, you know, that we do have a part of our mind, a memory of the wholeness of what we really are in our mind outside the dream of time and space that we've forgotten, that we can join with, you know, and we've completely forgotten that we are not the personal selves that we think we are, that seem so vulnerable and shaken by the realities of our daily life and the realities of the, you know, the collective outpicturing of the belief in, you know, that we separated from God and now are guilty and have to constantly hide, you know, have to hide out in a world and try to prove that we exist, but it's not our fault. We're not aware of any of that. So we don't even know we have a mind most of the time, and except that we're learning that as course students, what Jesus is trying to teach us as our, you know, as that symbol of that presence, that memory of wholeness in our mind, is that you do have a mind, that you're not these vulnerable bodies, and you're not, there aren't some that are better than others. There aren't all these differences that we see around us, despite the horrific things that bodies seem to do to each other. But, you know, again, within our dream. And so when we talk about going above the battleground, what was appealing to me about this section, there were a lot of reasons. I had a recent health scare that I'm not going to, we could take up the whole time talking about that. So I'm not going to do that. But during the experience of that, with all the testings that I had to have done in a couple of days, you know, being hospitalized, I'm fine now. So, but there was some scary things going on. And so while I was going through that, I really had the experience, kind of this split, simultaneous experience of going through it and realizing that there was a part of me, you know, that is identified with the body that's extremely frightened, but then also really aware, you know, what occurred to me was above the battleground, that there was almost a witnessing of what was going on, and a very reassuring awareness that in truth, I was safe, that we are all safe, and that nothing, you know, it was an experience of the ideas that the Course talks about, that nothing, you know, that my body really can't be threatened, that I'm a mind and not a body. And being sort of above the battleground. I mean, literally, you know, sort of picturing myself above the battleground. And I wasn't really trying to do that. It's just that, you know, we've been studying and practicing the Course, and that awareness that I have in a right mind was there. And I, not Susan, but the decision-making mind, chose to identify with that part of my mind, even as the body did what it was doing, and the people, you know, the practitioners and physicians were doing what they do. And even though there seemed to be sort of fearfulness around me, a lot of it. So that was the, you know, my experience of that was really something that I would not have believed possible for a lot of the time that I was, you know, going through this. And also has continued in the last couple of weeks, where I've felt it really be an awareness that has carried into my perception, or at least, an awareness that I have a choice, has been at the forefront, more at the forefront of my awareness, in witnessing the kinds of things that have been going on, you know, the battleground, basically, of the dream, the collective dream, in which, you know, there's just all of this fear and judgment and condemnation and hatred and, you know, feelings. I mean, people that are acting out on a level that are, you know, attacking others and victimizing others, certainly, don't, as this beautiful section of the text concludes, who, with the love of God upholding him, could find the choice of miracles or murder hard to make? Well, obviously, you know, anyone who really felt the love of God upholding him would never act out in any of these ways, and you know, must already be feeling completely so guilty and so such, you know, that intense solitary confinement of the ego thought system that on some level we all feel, if we're really, you know, if we really are honest with ourselves and really look. And so, you know, our challenge, as we were talking about before we started recording, as course students, is really to see how, when we see something that seems really large and catastrophic like this, we, you know, we find it so unforgivable, you know, even knowing what we know from practicing the course, that you know, we're really not forgiving anything real. We kind of throw that out the window and say, well, you know, I can't, in this situation, this is an exception, I can't understand how anybody could do this. And so what we're effectively doing is distancing ourselves, saying that the differences among us are real, and you know, that the guilt ultimately that caused us to hang out in this world in the first place, or believe that we were hanging out here, that made us flee the mind in the first place, that guilt is real and now really does have real consequences. And you know, the course is pretty absolute that in truth that's not the case. You know, not one note in Heaven's Song was missed. We are still, you know, gently and lovingly embraced by God. God doesn't know anything about this imaginary crime of separation and fragmentation that we are pretending we pulled off, and which in truth is really over. So, you know, we don't have to accept all of that. We're being led through this practice to that awareness, to that awakening of that. But what we do as course students need to look at is the way we try to draw lines in the sand with each other, and the way we judge and condemn each other. And that includes, you know, again, there's no hierarchy of illusions from the course's perspective. Any illusion, anything that seems to make the dream real, anything external to my mind is an outside picture of the inner condition for having chosen guilt in the mind, and means that I must have identified with my own guilt, with my own belief, and you know, and my own fear, and I need very badly to point a finger at someone. So I've already chosen the ego in the mind, and the result is that I turn on the news and I see another example that reinforces my belief that the world is very real, and we have to defend against it, and there are good guys and bad guys. And, you know, that's a real challenge, but that's the material that we work with. The truth from the course's perspective is that even the, and I'm paraphrasing this, but even the minor twinge of annoyance, you know, hides the thought, and it was just a thought, and it was just silly, but the thought of murder, the thought that we could push God's love away, we could destroy real love. And it's that guilt over that belief that everybody here is walking around with. And, you know, it's what causes us to withhold love in our relationships. It's what causes us to experience our own bodies under attack. It's what causes us to, you know, to judge people on the news and to react to an email or something that, you know, from our past that happened 40 years ago that crosses our mind and we're still angry about. You know, anything that causes any distress whatsoever, any seeming loss of peace that I am attributing to something outside my mind is my choice to reinforce guilt in my mind. That's my choice for the ego, for the teacher, of guilt in the mind. But what's choosing? Well, what's choosing is the decision-making mind. I've forgotten that I'm a mind and not a body. But I can go above the battleground. I can go back to the mind, and that's where peace is. That's where love for everyone is. That's where all forgiveness is. You know, the ultimate forgiveness of the course is nothing happened. Nothing happened, you know, at the seeming beginning of this silliness, and nothing's happened as a result. Ideas did not leave their source, which is one of the major, underpinnings of the course's thought system. This didn't happen. And so we're fighting an imaginary battle with each other, again, always to prove that I really do exist apart from God, but it's not my fault. It's blanks. And, you know, we all have any number at any given moment of people and situations and, you know, the greater world at large that we can fill in the blank with. And that makes me temporarily feel more innocent. But, you know, as we've been practicing this more and more, it starts to not work. We start to see this as a maladaptive solution, as Ken said, to a non-existent problem. And we recognize that, you know what, I can't feel peace. I can't feel good about myself. I can't feel loving. Love is gone when I'm condemning. It's just gone. You know, I've made the error real. Love, I pushed love away and I'm never going to find it again. And, you know, so I have to really see that everything that I'm reacting to is a call for my own, the healing of my own mind. It's not about anybody else out there.
Yeah. And, you know, something that you said also reminded me, which I think is such an important point, is that, you know, automatically when we hear this word battleground, we're thinking, oh, well, that's about the news or that's about what's happening somewhere in the world. But the battleground is what's going on in our own heads. You know, it's our own perception. It's what's going on for us. And in some ways, you could say it's totally outside of anything that we think is really going on in the world. The battleground is very personal.
Absolutely. Everything to the, you know, my identification with the personal self was a continuation of that mistake in making guilt real, making the separation real. You know, that was a defense against the guilt that I felt over it. So we're all identifying with these fragments of the one decision-making mind, and we've completely forgotten that it's a decision, you know, that it's a mind, that it has nothing. I mean, that was deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so we have to, but you're right that we think of a battleground as those big bloody kinds of things that we're talking about on the collective. But, the outpicturing of that in my daily life, in the ordinary, quote unquote, life in between the catastrophes is the battleground in my kitchen over the dishes in the sink. The emails are a perfect example. You know, I can't believe the tone that someone had in this email or the way they discounted me or, you know, all the crap that we get involved in, all the, you know, the battleground of believing that something, the reason that I'm like this today is because, you know, something that happened to me, by an adult 30 or 40 years ago, or someone withholding love from me or not giving me my, you know, not noticing me or whatever. I mean, we do this all the time. And when we begin to, you know, and the workbook first introduces us to this, but the practice, the ongoing practice from there, that's just the introduction. The practice of the course is, you know, watching the contents of our mind throughout the day, setting our goal, changing the purpose of our lives from this solitary confinement of the ego thought system in which it's us against everyone. It really is, you know, it's my way or the highway all the time. And,
yeah. And
I mean, if we're honest with ourselves, that's true. You know, we're always either trying to seduce someone into doing what we want them to do, or we're trying to overthrow someone for what they did to us, you know, and it's really, again, it's this overthrowing of God, you know, this belief that we just keep acting this out. So, you know, as I started to say, that it's this watching our mind and making the purpose of our lives now a classroom in which we pay attention to our reactions. We pay attention to where we're pointing a finger. That's our cue that we've chosen the ego. And, you know, as course students, the red flag, which should get us to pause, to take pause. And at least, if all we can do, at least question, maybe I'm wrong about what's really happening here. You know, why? Because I don't like how I feel. And, you know, if I'm feeling anything but kindness toward everyone involved, if I'm feeling a different, you know, empathy for the victims in some of these horrible things that we've been talking about, but not empathy for the victim, then I know I've chosen the ego. you know, and that's because of the lack of love I'm siding with within myself. It has nothing to do with anything that's out there. So I can change the purpose of my reaction, the purpose of what I, you know, what I'm observing in my life, the judgments that I have and the reactions that I'm having, to taking another step toward above the battleground, going back to the mind, remembering that I have a choice, or I can root myself more firmly in the battleground and buy another weapon, literally or figuratively.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in fact, in this part of the text, there's a part that it says, when the temptation to attack rises to make your mind darkened and murderous. See, he's not mincing words here.
No, he's not.
Murderous.
Yes.
Remember, you can see the battle from above. Even in forms you do not recognize, the signs you know. There's a stab of pain, a twinge of guilt, and above all else, a loss of peace. You know it well. When they occur, leave not your place on high, but quickly choose a miracle instead of murder.
Yeah.
You know, so once again, not mincing words, but right, also trying to encourage us, making us aware that it's these small things within us. We want to say, oh, well, I don't have that much anger. I don't have that much frustration. Like you said, I'm separate from the people choosing these incredible violent acts. I'm separate from that. But he's saying, no, it's a stab of pain, a twinge of guilt. If you have a loss of peace, then there is no difference. You know, that ought to be your red flag. That ought to be your cue. You've come down from that. You know, you're going right back into the battleground, because that's what we feel when we identify as a body.
Absolutely. And it's that, you know, the minor twinge of annoyance. I mean, that, you know, again, somebody, you know, getting upset over someone leaving the dishes in the sink, you know, to use a very pedestrian example. I mean, anything that is saying, you know, you upset me.
Yeah.
For the reason that, you know, I started my day out wrong or whatever, you know, or, you know, I turn on the news and what do I do every morning? I turn on the news. Let me have some more of it, you know? And I mean, I'm not saying, the Course is not saying that we're polluting ourselves with the news. There's nothing real about the news from the Course's perspective. The Course is saying, you know, there's a choice. I already made the choice to feel victimized, and then when I turned on the news, I decided, oh, you know, that's the victimizer.
Right, that's the cause.
That's the cause.
Yeah, I was just kind of thinking the other day that, you know, I mean, I kind of joke about this, but there's a part of me, you know, when it says, you know, we learn our lessons through relationships, and it's like, I can do you one better. Let's just forget all those relationships. You know, somehow I can figure this out. And yet, you know, what I notice is there's always going to be a reason to project it onto somebody else, whether it's a stranger, whether it's my dog. You know, there's always going to be somebody. So even if you consciously think, okay, I'm going to just somehow get this, or I'm going to somehow work this out, somehow I'm going to move beyond these special relationships. No, you're not. You know, you're going to find the special relationship with the toaster, you know, or whatever it is. It's always going to be something if you're not looking at the mind, if you're not really looking at the cause of the upset, of the frustration. You're just going to project it all over the place. We're always going to find a candidate that is worthy of being our tormentor.
Absolutely, because we're always looking for scapegoats for the sense of guilt that we feel within.
Yes.
And really, again, you know, it's important to remember that the Course comes to us in the context of relationships. It came to Helen and Bill in the context of a very contentious relationship with each other and also within their work environment. So the Course, from the Course's perspective, you know, trying to remove yourself from your relationships is not the answer. It's changing the purpose again of your relationships, including your relationship with your own body. You know, it's just with any body is a special relationship. So, you know, the answer comes in the Course when we go above the battleground. There's that awareness that we're all fighting the same hard battle. You know, that Ken used to talk about, that's a Philo quote, I think, but So, you know, that awareness comes when we're willing to take 100% responsibility for for our experience, you know, for the reactions to our experience, not for the other person's ego attack. I'm not responsible for the fact that someone decided to strap a bomb onto their body and walk into a school or something. But I am responsible for my reaction to it, again, you know, as Ken always emphasized in the course, because the course emphasizes it, that, you know, my wanting to make a distinction between victims and victimizers and to exclude the victimizer from the love of God. And, you know, I mean, that was the problem from the very beginning, that there could be fragmentation, that there could be a lack of love, that there could be a crime against perfect oneness, eternal love. And that's a lie. And so, you know, again, from the perspective of where we seem to be in the dream, the answer is always trying to ask for help to see our sameness with an M, you know, that we are the same, that everybody here is fighting that same hard battle, and everybody walking this earth is walking around, you know, the seeming earth with excruciating pain. It doesn't matter, you know, if we're good at covering it over and, you know, covering it over with a positive attitude and just really pretending that everything's okay. Or if we're very aware, you know, that of the guilt in our mind, it doesn't matter. It's all a defense against the truth. And from, you know, it's all the belief that we could be hateful, that we could attack God. And so the solution is to take that projection, to take our perception of that, our dark, you know, what he was talking about here. So what does he say when the temptation, you know, when we have a pain, a twinge of guilt, and above all, a loss of peace, is to bring that back to the mind. And usually, you know, it's not, he says, leave not your place on high. Well, we've already left our place on high usually.
Yeah. Yeah, we're halfway down that mountain, aren't we?
The decision-making mind, you know, we're almost, you know, we're more and more we're learning to go back to that, but usually it's a backing up, you know, it's a backing up the ladder that we chose to let separation lead us down again at any given moment. And so when we have those kinds of negative feelings, and we're always pointing a finger, as you said, at some scapegoat for them, because otherwise the ego thought system is one or the other. So somebody's got to be guilty here, and it better not be me.
Yeah. You know? Somebody's going to have to pay.
Right. And, you know, I mean, and the truth is no one's guilty, but within our own twisted, you know, imagining, that's our belief. So it has to be one or the other. So when we find ourselves in that pointing a finger, having that minor twinge of annoyance with, you know, at whatever level, you know, within the hierarchy of illusions, it seems to be happening. The practice is to go back, you know, is to say, you know, maybe I'm wrong about the cause of this. And I'd really like to see this with you. You know, I'd like to see peace instead of this. And the only place that there's peace is in the mind, is in the right mind. But that invitation that, you know, of maybe I'm wrong opens the door, you know, brings me back up the ladder to the decision-making mind. And I remember I have a choice. I have two teachers here. I don't have to look at it this way. And even if I'm just too afraid right now to accept the answer, I can be in touch with that answer. I can be in touch with the fact that there is an answer. Maybe I'm too afraid right now to accept it, but it's there. And I would like to receive it. I would like to remember it. And I will when my fear subsides, but to kind of keep in touch with that answer. So I'm not excluding it, you know, I mean, because if I'm not feeling it and I'm, you know, I'm too afraid, it's not because Jesus went anywhere. Again, it's, we're the ones who run away from the mind, you know, constantly. But we're learning through this practice, the contrast of when we've chosen, you know, what that peace again, you know, to see that really, like I was talking about in the example of a health scare, that really what is happening to my body has nothing to do either with, or to anybody, has nothing to do with the God's love for us, with the peace in the mind, and with our true safety. You know, the safety is not about bodies. Bodies, from the Course's perspective, don't live and they don't die. They're, you know, they're just neutral. They're just a scapegoat as well for the wild imaginings, the fearful imaginings of the mind made mad by guilt. You know, so So the practice is always really, we're beginning to see that contrast as we practice this, that, wow, you know, there must be another part of my mind, because it is possible to be at peace, and it is possible to see our sameness and feel only compassion for everyone involved. And that doesn't come from a brain, because brains don't think like that.
Right.
You know? So it's, you know, the healing of our mind is in this, is in our willingness. And it just has to be a little willingness to practice, to remember, to keep practicing, to allow our trust to be built for us through the shifts that we make along the way to, you know, having those aha moments when we see, oh, you know, I am peaceful right now. I do feel only compassion for everyone involved. And that would always include me. Then I have compassion for myself again. Then I know that I'm loved and loving, which is not what we walk around with. We do not know that. That's why we fight so hard to defend our, you know, our point of view that makes someone else guilty.
Yeah. Well, and you know, what was kind of coming into my mind is listening to some of the coverage coming out of France, you know, after the situation in Nice. And there was something that was kind of remarkable to me. And, you know, maybe it was just I was selectively hearing and, you know, certainly didn't watch that much. But that from the French people themselves, the people that live there, there's such a spirit of we will move on versus just let's find some blame. Let's, you know, who did this? Who was wrong in this situation? Who, you know, who allowed this to happen? And I kind of noticed that. And I mean, like I said, maybe it was selective hearing, but it was almost like a choice to look at it from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not spend all their time going, how did this happen? I mean, not that you don't need to know how it happened, but you know, just moving on, looking towards a future, looking towards healing, looking towards how to kind of recover that little strip of beach and have it not just be the scene of the crime.
Right.
And I kind of noticed that. I mean, I thought, whoa, you know, that I wonder if that's a real cultural thing between the United States and Europe or the United States and France. It was a different kind of calm that I heard in a lot of the people that were talking about it.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, you know, we all have the same equipment within the mind. I mean, we're all, you know, we don't have to be course students to have, we're all just fragments of the decision-making mind. And, you know, that is always choosing between the ego or Holy Spirit, right mind. And so, you know, again, we have that within us, and the power of the mind to choose love is still there, you know? And so, again, you know, in the practice of this with the course, it's really seeing, being honest with myself and watching the contents of my own judgments and reactions and thoughts, that it's when I'm not feeling that kind of love and kindness that I know I need help. And so, you know, this course does demand, if we really want to heal our minds, it demands a lot of honesty with ourselves. And, you know, again, even if we're not willing to change our mind, to at least own the fact that I'm choosing not to change my mind right now. I'm digging in my heels because,
yeah,
you know, there must be a part of me that's too afraid, and that's not a sin. I don't have to judge myself for it, but I need to fess up to it, you know, and just be honest with Jesus. And he knows we're afraid. He tells us that over and over again. This is very threatening. And that's why we want to take, you know, we want to take gentle steps. And so we work with it. We work with him as our teacher. We're in school. We're not, you know, we're not graduate students. We're nursery school, most of us.
Yeah, really.
Oh.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah. So it's to be patient with ourselves, to be patient with others, but to, as the Course says, to deny the denial of truth. You know, I'm wrong about what I see. You know, I increasingly, as I practice this, I can learn to be happily wrong, because I have more and more experiences of my right mind and the peace of not excluding anyone, you know, which means the peace of not excluding myself from love. But, you know, along the way, I can at least question, you know, maybe I'm not happily wrong, but I can still admit that, you know, I must be wrong about this, because it's seeing differences. It's seeing, you know, it's seeing hate, it's seeing guilt. And that's not saying denying what, you know, what our body's eyes are seeing. It's not a denial of, you know, my experience, but it's a denial of the belief that what my eyes are seeing is responsible for my peace. That
yes.
I have to deny.
Yeah. Well, and like in the very last paragraph of this section of the text, it says, those with the strength of God in their awareness could never think of battle. What could they gain but loss of their perfection? For everything fought for on the battleground is of the body, something it seems to offer or to own. No one who knows that he has everything could seek for limitation, nor could he value the body's offerings. And I was kind of thinking of this because, like you said, we can be happily wrong. You know, it's like once we have a taste of that, there is a part of us that says, yeah, I'm trading everything for nothing.
Yes, yes. And that's exactly right. I mean, the everything of heaven, the everything of what I am, you know, the eternal, all-inclusive love of our true nature is what we've traded for an experiment in individuality that is you know, completely saturated with guilt. over believing that it's a crime to have that thought, you know? So we're experiencing ourselves as so weak, as really, I mean, really as nothing, but as such miserable, sinning, you know, scurvy worms.
Yeah.
Quote Shakespeare. But, you know, that's the way we feel. I mean, I think, CA, that For me, in my practice with this, and you know, I'm just moving along like anybody else, but what I have found so much that I am so grateful for is that compassion that arises through this practice, for really seeing, you know, I don't react hardly at all anymore to, again, that victims are different than victimizers, you know? Because it's, when we really look at this, you can begin to feel that, you know, that this, I have an ego too, and it's excruciating. It's excruciating to feel that, you know, this guilt that we feel, and everybody's feeling it. It's that same lost, you know, alien child that I'm always quoting lesson 182. I will be still an instant and go home. But this section also talks about, you know, the excruciating nature of believing that I destroyed love, that everybody is walking around with. And on some level, you know, we either think that we need to victimize, or we think we need to be victimized, you know, to punish ourselves so God doesn't have to get us. I mean, we all, on some level, want to be victims. And, you know, and so, and we do that in our relationships all the time, in small ways and big ways. And, you know, it's always to try to prove that I'm innocent, because we don't feel innocent. None of us do. And so, you know, the great, to begin to have that compassion means that we're beginning to forgive ourselves. We're beginning to have compassion for ourselves and be much more in touch with the vulnerability that we feel when we've chosen the ego. And that's greatly motivating for us, because we have that contrast of when we're looking at it through Jesus's eyes, you know, we really see that all is forgiven, that everyone is still loved, you know, and again, that everybody that is acting otherwise is feeling, you know, is not feeling the love of God upholding them, is feeling completely condemned to hell, to that solitary confinement. And, you know, that's excruciating. It makes people do terrible things.
Yeah.
But we're not a body, you know, and we're learning that. And through this practice, we identify less and less over time. We're less and less identified with the body and more identified with the mind. And again, that's where healing is. That's where peace is, and that's where awakening will happen, in the mind, not in the body.
Right. Well, and I was just thinking in the workbook lessons, we're getting really close to that section. It's a review where before you say every single lesson, before you review it, you say, I am not a body. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm trying to think of what the exact line is.
Free and I'm still as God created me.
Is that, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's, I'm trying to think and I just had it. Let me see if I can find it really quick. You know, before, like I said, it's a review and it's right as you get to lesson, I think, 201,
okay.
Which, you know, we're getting pretty close. I mean, we will be there by at least August. Let's put it that way. And yeah, I am not a body. I am free, for I am still as God created me. That's what it is. And before you look at each of the lessons in the review, you always say that. I mean, that's part of it. I am not a body. I am free, for I am still as God created me.
Right, right. And I mean, again, that's an intellectual awareness to us right now, because we still experience ourselves as bodies, but it is where we're being led, you know, at the top of the ladder. We'll know that we will no longer be identified with our body. We'll know we're not here. We don't know that right now, but the practice that enables us to learn that ultimately is forgiveness, is just what we've been talking about. You know, saying that nothing outside me has the power to take my peace away. And everyone here is fighting the same battle. I'm wrong about the differences I see. I'm wrong about the cause of my distress. And I do have a choice, even, you know, about of which teacher I'm going to choose, even if I'm too afraid to make it right now. You know, that's the practice that leads us ultimately to the awareness that I'm not a body. You know, at the end of this journey, at the top of this ladder, we'll know that. There won't be any conflict left in the mind. There won't be any guilt left to engage in conflict. There will be no duality in our mind anymore. You know, the mind will be healed. It won't be split anymore. And so at that point, even the decision maker, you know, the decision maker is just a term we're using to explain the split mind. But, you know, we will have made the final decision that no one's guilty here, including me. Nothing happened to, you know, not one note in Heaven's Song was missed. Nothing happened to change my one self as the one child of God that is seamlessly fused with God, you know, that has never stopped being part of God and extending the love that our Creator has been simultaneously extending, even though we're dreaming otherwise. You know, that's never been interrupted. So, you know, I think it doesn't, at a practical level, it doesn't really help for us to kind of, you know, just chant to ourselves, free. I mean, I remember trying to do that and, you know, that's kind of trying to shout down the ego.
Uh-huh.
And so it's, but to think of it as, you know, that awareness is where we're being led and that will come to us. I mean, it's a good thing to know on an intellectual level, and eventually it will be our experience. But we don't have to effort to get there. We just have to take the tiny steps that Jesus tells us. You know, our role is very very minimalist in this, and we don't need to do more. You know, we need to do less more often.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. Less more often.
And the less is just those two, you know, it's just those two steps that I'm wrong. I'm wrong about the cause. This is not, you know, I'm not upset for the reason I think. And the reason I'm pointing fingers and making these distinctions, and the reason I'm feeling unfairly treated, and the reason I'm feeling terrified, and the reason I'm feeling anxious and depressed, and all of it, you know, it's not because of what I think it is. It's not because of them or him or it. It's because I made a choice in the mind again to make separation real and, you know, to make guilt real. But I, who made that choice, it's not Susan, it's not CA. There is a part of me that made that choice that can also choose again. And so right, you know, within this moment, I can sort of claim that decision making mind and say, you know, I want to choose again. I want to see, I want to make the choice against the ego, which just opens the door to see it as Jesus sees it. You know, I can say I'm wrong, and that's choosing against the ego, and that's really enough to say, you know, to open up the possibility for truth.
Yeah, and I was thinking that one thing I so love about A Course in Miracles, or the practice of it, is, and especially maybe after, you know, doing the workbook lessons, is it does really train my mind that it may take me a little bit, but when I'm unhappy or when something's going on, I do kind of stop and say, I could see peace instead of this.
Yeah.
I could make a different choice. And, you know, at first, I wasn't doing that very often. And now I find that I do that fairly often, even if I don't make that other choice.
That's right.
You know, I may not do it, but at least I remind myself, you could see this differently if you wanted to. There is another option.
And that's so important, because you're entertaining the possibility again that you're wrong. And what does it do? It's in some way acknowledging that it's a decision, that I made a choice, you know, to make the separation real, but I could choose peace, because that's the only reason that I'm ever experiencing something other than peace, is when I've chosen, you know, I've chosen for the teacher of guilt in the mind. And so that's not the only part of my mind. There is another presence in me. I could experience that. Maybe I'm too afraid right now. And that's where that gentleness is so important, to say, okay, well, you know, maybe I seem to, you know, maybe I go through the motions of I want to see that peace, but I'm not feeling that peace. So if I'm not feeling that peace, don't fight yourself, but also don't indulge yourself. You know, I'm still wrong. but it's because of my fear. And, you know, that's where the gentleness comes in. I'm just as afraid as everybody else when I've chosen the ego. There's no difference. You know, it's excruciating.
Yes.
And it's the pain of that that we become more and more sensitive to through this practice. And versus the contrast of when we do have those shifts to a peace not of this world, because everything is still, you know, everything's still going to hell in the world. That hasn't really changed. Peace, you know. So that shows us, or in my body, or in, you know, whatever. It has nothing to do with how it goes out there, quote unquote. But when I have those experiences and I see I could be peaceful in the same situation, then and loving. I could, you know, therefore, if I've chosen that memory of wholeness in my mind, then anything I do or say would be loving. Then I see that, well, you know, I mean, that's the contrast, and I want more of that. You know, I mean, that feels, that's a beautiful experience, and it's all I really want. You know, I begin to realize this is really what I want, not to be right, not to be, you know, I don't need to feel victimized to feel better about myself, because the guilt is being dissolved for me, undone, as the Course says, for me. And it's just through this practice. And we go back and forth for a long time. And, you know, don't make a big deal out of that. And that's just my fear. The more we can try to not judge ourselves, and believe me, that's very hard. Because I've been through a lot of judging myself. I think it's inevitable that we you know, when we begin to see what we're doing, we begin to, you know, kind of think that there's no way out, and we think we're bad or something, you know. But it's not. It's just what everybody here does, because we're frightened. You know, we're frightened children, and you know, we're learning to grow up gradually with Jesus into a recognition that we're actually innocent, and it's okay to grow into, you know, to become like Jesus, to grow up to be like Jesus, and to remember that we're all just the same. And that precedes our recognition of our oneness. You know, Ken always said that on an earthly level, and forgiveness is, you know, on a worldly level, it's the worldly expression of love here. And so here in the world, where we still experience guilt, we need a process to go back to the mind. But ultimately, only innocence prevails, because nothing happened.
Yep, you got that right. And when I'm looking at the clock and I realize we have to wrap it up. So I would ask you, is there any final comment you want to make on this, what we've been talking about, and then we can do some announcements?
You know, I just think, you know, it's just a very good, as we are in a very seeming contentious, you know, chapter in the dream, and it's always contentious, but it seems to be right in our face. You know, think about this, you know, try to employ this in your practice. If you're a Course student, you know, I have a choice right now. I can go above the battleground. I can go back to the mind. I have a teacher there that's always with me. And the great power of A Course in Miracles is the decision-making mind. And, you know, I can question when I'm identifying with bodies, whether it's condemning bodies or whether I'm experiencing an attack, you know, a belief that my own body is attacked or I'm attacking another body physically or psychologically, it doesn't matter. That, you know, I have another choice here. I can go back to the mind. And can I just read from this a sentence or two? He says, be lifted up and from a higher place, look down upon it. From there will your perspective be quite different. Here in the midst of it, it does seem real. Yet from above, the choice is miracles instead of murder. And the perspective coming from this choice shows you the battle is not real and easily escaped. And, you know, again, that's the peace not of this world. And that's peace from which compassion will flow for everyone, including me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the need of every heart.
Okay, well, I think that's a good place to leave it today.
Great.
Okay, well, thanks. So any announcements or of things that are coming up for you, Susan?
You know, there's a series of Sunday gatherings, and I'm trying to – I think they start July 31st at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center is doing some of the teachers from the School of Reason and I'm participating in too. And we're all just kind of doing a different gathering, but it's all kind of fundamental themes of the course. And my topic is going to be healing the mind, but you know, there's a topic on forgiveness. There's the first class, I believe they're going to go over the Ken Wapnick's chart and the two levels that the course talks about. So for anybody that wants to do sort of a weekend, Sunday, you know, hourly for about, I think it's for 6 weeks immersion. That's a really, a great way to just kind of, you know, really ground yourself in some of the major themes and fundamentals of the course, or just review them if you're an ongoing student.
That sounds great. And so that's for people who live in or around the Denver metro area.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
Okay, good. And that information, if they want more information, should they go to forays.com?
You know, I don't have anything on my site yet. It will probably be on the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center site. I don't know that it's there yet. There are flyers. There should be eventually flyers at the center. I'm not sure if they're there yet. But this, as far as I know, it is starting on July 31st, which is a Sunday, I believe. And then I think it goes through maybe the first week in September. And I think I'm going to be there on August 14th.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, so people, if you live in this area, you might want to Google the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center. I think that their website is pretty much just that, Rocky Mountain Miracle Center. So,
yes.
But I know if you Google it, you're going to hit it and you're going to find that information. So, Susan, thank you so much for being here today.
Great. Thank you. It's always good to talk with you.
Oh, it's great to talk to you. I always just feel great after I've talked to you. So thank you so much. And I look forward to another conversation and to some of those Sundays over at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center. But I also want to thank all the listeners today and everybody who came into the chat room, and also to our producer, Scott Weaver. Thanks for being here today and taking care of everything. And I'd remind everybody that you can always find me on Tuesdays for my other show, Simple Tales, in which we talk about astrology, and it's the same time. It is 10 a.m. Pacific, but it's on Tuesdays here on 1-2 Radio. But for today, I hope that you will stick around, because following me today is Kathleen Peterson and friends. So please stick around and listen to her show, which is always good. And until next week, I hope you relax and wear loose clothes. You've been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and with my guest, Susan Dugan, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and the battleground.